dangerously close.
Okay. My guest today is Marina Perkel. Marina is a clinical hypnotherapist, shamanic healer, and spiritual coach. She has traveled the world to learn and study under the most powerful healers across the globe and believes the power of the mind can heal just about anything. What's up, Marina?
Hi, how are you?
I am doing absolutely fabulous. I'm so glad we finally got to connect and we're on here. And I just want to say to the listeners, if you thought I was going to start this interview by asking Marina about hypnotherapy, then that's probably because you didn't know she used to be a spirit tour guide at the, I would say, infamous Stanley Hotel. For anyone that hasn't seen The Shining or doesn't know what the Stanley Hotel is, could you maybe just real quick kind of explain what is the Stanley Hotel? And then also, like, just to add to that question, how did you end up becoming a spirit tour guide there?
Definitely. Well, it's a great story, and life is, you know, full of plot twists, right? My little he's going to be bouncing in and out in case. So I actually, it was COVID. Sorry for a little noise there. It was during COVID, and I was living in Austin, Texas, and at that time I had a full practice. I was loving life, living out on a ranch in this beautiful, you know, Austin reality. And COVID hit. And then right when COVID hit, my sister also passed away. So it was this, for me, my life went from this really beautiful, living my best life to all of that, like everything kind of crashing down in my reality. And I didn't really know what to do with myself in that time. The world was shutting down. I was in deep grief. And so my really wonderful family in Colorado, they're building a healing center in Estes Park. So Estes Park, it's beautiful. And this is where the Stanley Hotel lies, right? This is where this beautiful, famous Stanley Hotel. I had no idea.
I am unfamiliar with the geography of Colorado. When you say it's close by, is that like a state park, or is that what you mean? Is it?
Yeah. So there's, you know, the Rocky Mountain National Park is, you know, the famous. So it's like an hour and a half from Denver, Estes Park is. It's beautiful.
Okay.
So basically, you know, I packed my car with everything, and I just decided to move. You know, the world shut down. I don't really know what to do with myself. And I needed to be with family and kind of heal. And so I spent time, you know, on the property, and I was doing these, you know, I did my own personal kind of healing work. I worked with a grief recovery specialist, went through my own journey, and did virtual sessions. And then I was kind of exploring, you know, this little town, and I stumbled upon this beautiful hotel, and it was closed down at the time. And I found myself just kind of wandering the grounds, going through the maze. And there was just an energy there that I was really drawn to. I was just really, there was something special there. It was all closed, but I found myself wanting to be there every day. I'd grab my tea and go for walks and just kind of explore it. And I started just to kind of feel, you know, I think I'm supposed to be here in some way. They had the opening, the grand like reopening, and I was there. I ended up meeting, you know, the woman who worked with, you know, the HR, and I had a conversation with her. I told her, you know, what I did, the hypnotherapy, and I do shamanic healing. And she said, would you be interested in being a spirit tour guide, you know, at nighttime? And I said, 100%. I would love to, you know. And also, you know, it was very interesting because, you know, at that time, I was very connected on this different level with the spirit world because my sister, who I was extremely close to, had just passed away. So I had this different soul connection, and I was really deeply exploring those realms even more.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's kind of how it happened. It felt like this really beautiful, divine, interesting thing. And then it just led to many experiences that I had never experienced personally in the spirit world.
I guess I have to ask, just because when you say, like, when you discovered the property and it was closed down and you were wandering around that extremely famous maze, you know, at the end of The Shining, that's the maze that Jack Nicholson is chasing his fam, or you know, I guess Jack Torrance is chasing his family through. And
Yes.
did you not feel any kind of like sense of maybe like that it was ominous or anything? I mean, just because of the history of it being in two horror films now, because it was in Dr. Sleep as well.
Yeah, you know, it's just it was very buzzy, I would say. It was very active, it was very buzzy. You know, it was very, you know, it's kind of fascinating being there, because there were some days the energy felt very bright and light, and there were some days where it didn't. There were days where it felt on the opposite. It was because it really is this vortex, that it really is this portal, the Stanley Hotel. It's for me, you know, I've traveled the world, and it definitely is the most active place spiritually that I've found.
Do you know why, maybe anecdotally, why Stanley Kubrick decided to film there? Like, is that, I mean, is there, do you know what some of the decisions behind the scenes were for that?
Well, and here's something very interesting, is The Shining actually wasn't filmed there at the hotel. A lot of people don't know that. So The Shining was inspired by the Stanley Hotel. So the story goes, you know, that you know, he was basically living in Boulder, Stephen King at the time, and it was the winter, and his wife and he, they went on, you know, a trip up to Estes Park, and they stayed in room 217. And so the whole story goes is that he, you know, was staying the first night there, and there was a snowstorm, the whole thing. So there's a lot that ties into it in the movie. Woke up, you know, I think at 3 in the morning, he had this terrible nightmare. And this nightmare was that his son was basically being eaten by that fire hose in the hallway. Right.
Yeah.
And it was this terrible, terrible dream. So he was completely like petrified, but woke up, went onto the balcony of room 217, lit a cigarette, had a whiskey, and then he basically channeled the whole outline of The Shining there on the balcony. So it was fully inspired, you know, by this space. And, you know, I believe he really channeled something in his dream there, you know, so there's so much going on there. But yeah, a lot of people don't know. They go there and they're like, oh, it was filmed here. But yeah.
Yeah. I can't believe that I actually forgot that we actually did an episode, something we used to do, and we'll bring back, where sometimes we do original film versus the sequel. We did like Alien versus Aliens, The Shining versus Dr. Sleep. It's surprising how many people actually will agree with me, some, because I said Aliens was better than Alien, and I did not expect to be supported so much. And I think a lot of people really agreed with that. Dr. Sleep didn't quite get. The Shining definitely took the win on that, popularity wise. But I did not know that bit of the story, that Stephen King formed that off a personal experience of being there. And is the Stanley Hotel's, that's in the top five most haunted hotels in the United States, or that's where it's ranked, right?
Definitely. When I was there, it was, I believe it was the top. I believe it had, you know, won the award as the top, you know, most spiritually active space for sure. Yeah.
I don't know, like, the best way to phrase it. I don't know, maybe like use the word maybe supernatural. I mean, there's so many different ways to say it, but did you have any experiences there where you felt like maybe you witnessed a phenomenon, or does that make sense? Like, where you were like, where it made sense to you, you're like, okay, that's why this place has got this reputation, because of any experiences maybe you had that would reinforce that.
Definitely. There were many experiences there. And it's kind of funny, because, you know, everybody who worked there, whether, you know, they were in the kitchen and they were the chef, or, you know, they were housekeeping, everybody, you know, it was kind of like this kind of little secret. We all kind of would share what was going on with each other. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there one time, it was the most interesting thing. Like, we had a pretty famous chef for a while in the kitchen, who got, they, you know, moved her there to have her kind of create buzz at the hotel. And, you know, she would have experiences all the time, like, you know, getting burned in these strange ways, or, you know, her keys mysteriously, her keys had like a GPS on them, her keys floating away and ending up in different buildings. You know, that was kind of wild. But for me, you know, as the spirit guide, you know, I would take guests all through the hotel, and some areas are more active than others. And the most active place in the hotel, you know, almost on the daily, was the concert hall, the basement of the concert hall. And there's a room down there that was called Lucy's room. And that's the story goes is that, you know, 17-year-old girl had, you know, she ran away from home. She was kind of hiding out at the Stanley, and she ended up freezing to death. So there's a whole kind of story behind it. But that room was interesting because it just had this frigid, cold energy to it always. And things would happen. And I had a few guests when I would bring down to the concert hall right before we'd enter Lucy's room. About three guests had passed out, where we had to call the ambulance to come and check on them.
Whoa.
Because and it was really wild. So for me, it was, you know, I really want to be somebody also who educates about the spirit world in a beautiful way, you know, not in a boo
Yeah,
way,
yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
you know, the way that I am and the work that I do, you know, there's a land of the living, there's a land of the dead, you know, the bridge is love, right? And so I really wanted to be that guide to educate and not freak people out. But sometimes there were things that kind of happened that I was just like, okay, you know, this is wild. We would do, I would host seances in different rooms where I actually could have the spirit that wanted to come through communicate in different ways. So one of the kind of games that I would play, you know, with the spirit that wanted to come through was I
Yeah.
would have guests hold like a dum-dum lollipop in their hand, you know, like head down, right?
Yeah.
And it would move through and knock it down, you know, or it would spin, start spinning around. And so there were different things. And a lot of people on the property believed that that was the children's spirits that existed there. The fourth floor of the Stanley Hotel was where the children and like the help back in the day would reside. It was a very like fancy, well-to-do, you know, event to go to the Stanley Hotel. And so that the fourth floor was very active, and that's somewhere where guests would constantly, you know, be complaining 3 in the morning. Children are running up and down the hallways. Can someone please tell them to stop? And then there was no one up there. There were no kids like at the
Yeah.
hotel, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it really was a very interesting reality to exist in. And, you know, how you and I started talking. At first, I think I was sharing the photo that kind of became famous, the paranormal, you know, photo that went from coast to coast.
Yeah.
So, you know, guests would, I would get, you know, guide the guests to take videos and photos, and orbs would show up, right? Which is a normal thing, you know, from day to day. But sometimes it would be different. Sometimes there would be like almost like a silhouette of light of a spirit,
Yeah.
or this famous image that Coast to Coast, you know, picked it up and wrote about it. And it is of the portal mirror in the concert hall of the Stanley Hotel. And that is a wild photo. So if you go online and you just Google Marina Pirkle Stanley Hotel, this article comes up and everyone can see the picture. And it looks very wild, and a lot of people have been like, is this, you know, is this a real, is this photoshopped? But there's a few different guests on that specific tour that took the same image, and it's wild because it really is like this head peeking around the corner of the mirror. Like you can see this fully defined outlined like character, you know, peeking around the corner of this mirror. So that, you know, had writ I wrote about that on Facebook because I was like, wow, this is the most clear image I've ever seen. And then it kind of ended up going viral and famous,
Yeah.
and people were just fascinated by it. So yeah, basically, you know, long story short, there was something every day that was going on.
That's so incredible that you got to be there for that m moment in time. I just want to go back just one, because just one step to something you said earlier. When you said you would bring guests down to the concert hall and that you had some guests that passed out, would you say that they passed out like maybe like from like a panic attack, maybe from fear? Is that, would that be like, what do you think triggered?
There's many different ways to to think about it, right? You know, so maybe it could have been the elevation, right? It could have been that because we're up in the Rocky Mountain Park, you know, that's kind of, but it was the same spot right when I got down the stairs that they would be the dizzy and then it would be like their, you know, family catching them or, you know what I mean? And so, you know, in the spiritual realm, I would say that maybe there was like an intense entity moving through, you know, or a more active day spiritually. Like for me, it felt almost like a train station of spirits there, if that makes sense. Like it was so active. There was so much going on. It was really interesting. So there's the, you know, logical way to think about it. You know, maybe it was elevation or, you know, but it was just the same spot. And then other guides had it happen as well. It wasn't just me. So it was almost like entering down there into that basement. It was overwhelming, you know, and maybe they were more sensitive spiritually, you know, maybe spirit connected with them, you know. So one of the guests said, you know, it felt like something went through me, you know. You don't
Whoa.
know. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess one thing you could say is, how many coincidences does it take to make, a fact? Or, but the reason I brought that up, or the reason I asked you if you thought that fear was possibly one of the factors that the people were experiencing, like that caused, like you said, it could be anything. It could be the elevation, could be they were dehydrated, or it could have, or they could have been overwhelmed with an emotion that isn't fear. The reason I ask that is because, from my personal, how I feel, if I was in a place that I truly felt was was haunted, and I felt that there was like paranormal activity, especially like, the way Hollywood really, really hit for so long, from from Poltergeist to literally like the movie Paranormal Activity, and so like that ghosts are menacing, the spirit world is horrifying. And psychologically, I don't know, maybe that's what we need, that cathartically. But I have so many questions, and I don't know, I don't want to jam them all into one, so I want to be careful how I say this. But the reason I asked if you thought if that was a fear based reaction for those people, for you, you said, you just showed up and like, yeah, some days it was a little more intense than others, but you do not fear like the spirit realm. Is that correct? Is that fair to say that this, it doesn't spark fear for you?
No, but you know, I'm trained in working with the spirit world, right? So and so my goal is to help people not feel this, you know, this Hollywood thing, right? You know, when I was for me, how I learned to work with the spirit world is my father passed away and I was very close to him. He was my best friend, like the love of my life. And I really deeply wanted to have a conversation with him. I really couldn't get over it. I was like, who do I need to work with? What do I need to do? I just felt like I needed that, right? And it led me on this journey of, because I had heard, you know, I've been studying shamanic healing for many since I was about 16. But it led me researching and learning and hearing about, you know, a Sangoma in Africa, that, you know, if I can study with a Sangoma in Africa, I can really learn, because supposedly, you know, they had really mastered the art of being between here and the spirit world.
Can you
So
I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt you, but can you tell me who the Sangoma are? I've never heard of them.
yeah, it's like a shamanic healer practice, you know, practitioner in Africa. It's kind of that realm. But yeah, like kind of what I was saying, they've really mastered the art of being between here and the spirit world. So they're kind of in a middle place. So there's a different level of like communication. And so I went on this journey and ended up in KwaZulu-Natal in South Africa, found a Sangoma that was referred from, you know, it was this beautiful process. But I was actually able to have a conversation with my dad. I was actually able to have a very real conversation. I had a translator there, but the things that were coming through and transmitted, it was no way any other information but my father. So I had this profound experience, and I was just, how do I, it helped me so much. I was like, how can I learn this to help other people to understand this, and the communication. How do you tap in? How do you communicate? You know, what is this? what is this different realm that they're in, right?
Yeah. I've had minor experiences, like nothing even remotely like what you're describing, but things like where someone has passed away and then I have a dream where that person is in it, and it kind of seems as though like it
They're
seems
visible.
almost a little bit different than a regular dream. It's almost like they popped in to the dream to say goodbye. Does that make sense? And I've
It happens, and that's a visit, right? And it's
yeah.
beautiful. And sometimes, you know, people even say, well, I felt like I could, like, I was really, they were there. I could smell them after I woke up, or I felt, you know, I felt them, or there was, you know. So often that's, you know, in the spirit world, they can come visit, and it does help bring peace and closure.
I really don't want to like linger on the topic of fear-based thinking, but I feel like it's kind of something that I can't just go past. I can't just breeze past it because it's so pervasive in our culture to not only fear death. That's like whether, I'm not here to argue whether or not we should fear death or, but also like to, in a way, like to fear the dead themselves. Sorry, this is kind of like this is all the this is not a preformed thought, so I'm having a hard time at
No,
coming
it's
up
okay.
with how I really want to phrase it, but and it's a lot like what I asked you before, but I guess before what I asked you is, do you feel afraid of do you feel afraid of what might be considered a haunted space? But why do you not feel afraid? This or here's actually can I add one thing to that too? Because like we had said, like in the Hollywoodization of this, and also not just Hollywood, but ghost tales, that go back throughout human history, these spooky, ghoulish, someone dies and now they're suddenly a dark figure, menacing, figure. Why don't you feel that that's the case?
I guess we can go a lot of different directions, you know, with that. Part of the work that I do is help unrest spirits become at peace and transition, move along their journey, right?
Yeah.
There's, of course, there's, you know, stories of, you know, hauntings and dark things happening. And, you know, there's, you know, there are some places in the world, of course, where there are darker energies, ominous energies. But for me, I haven't experienced personally that. You know, I might have experienced an annoyance, right? Or, you
Yeah.
know, it's like a, you know, but for me, that's where I get curious, not scared. I'm like, what are they trying to say? You know, I feel you, I can see you, I honor you. What do you need to say? What's happening? And then I try to tap in and create that space to understand, you know. So I know I'm kind of an alien. That's the kind of, but that's the way that I work with the spirit world. You know, I've never had anything bad happen to me. I've never had anything, you know, ominous happen to me. Yeah.
I think actually, when you use the word like that, you're an alien, it actually conjured in my mind though other types of like fear that a person might experience that I think could be an analogy. One I think is that's a lot of people have experienced. I've experienced, especially because I watched the movie Jaws way too young, and so when I go surfing, I get moments of kind of intense fear that are irrational. I haven't seen a shark. There is no, I mean, obviously there are sharks. They're in the water, but they're not there for me. That's not entirely the point. The point is the feeling of being in deep water and you can't see what's below the water. You can only see. Does that feel like that could be an analogy for someone who might be like, let's say, like you feel as though you've had an encounter with something supernatural. And the fear is the same as like being in deep water and you can't see what's in the water. So whatever is down there, because you don't know what it is, it frightens you. Does that make sense?
Well, I think, yeah, and I think people like fear. I mean, people go, you know, on roller coasters and these things because they like to feel something,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So I think it, you know, I think it's part of that, right? And yeah, definitely, you know, if we grew up watching poltergeists and these things, and you know, they might think that that's exactly what it is, right? Because you don't know any better. And you know, it's like that's what the spirit world is like, you know. It's I'm gonna get haunted, I'm gonna get possessed, you know.
Yeah.
That's a whole other realm talking about, you know, possessions and things like that, because that could be very real for people.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, you know, and the big thing, like, you know, why do people go to, you know, haunted corn mazes with the clowns chasing them with a with chainsaw? Because they want to feel their pain, to feel fear, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, and you know, there's, and there are, you know, there are some spirits that are unrest, and there's some wild energies out there, but you know, Hollywood is Hollywood for a reason, right?
I guess, and that leads me to the one thing I do have to ask, and I don't want to be, and I don't want to sound like I'm being silly, but because that's, you know, traditionally in all the ghost stories, the idea is that like an entity or a presence or however you might want to describe it from the spirit world or from another realm can affect the physical reality we live in. Do you think that's a possibility?
I do. I do. And this is kind of like a case by case situation, right? But
Yeah.
I think that could, you know, in certain situations, but it's not, you know, it's not super common. It's not super common, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think there's also too, I guess there's been instances, when we, you know, we briefly touched on possession, and oftentimes it's, you know, it might be more of an undiagnosed case of schizophrenia, and but could be so frightening to the people around that person, because it truly does seem as though like a dark force has entered them. And you know, I think there's even been some, you know, lawsuits in the past against like the Catholic Church for, because someone should have been treated for schizophrenia rather than exorcism. I don't know. I don't want to go down that road too far.
No, there's a whole, and you know, if you wanted to talk about, you know, I think that's a whole nother podcast, talking about entities and spirit release, and you know, that is a realm. Actually, there's a book by, actually, I was just reading it today, Spirit Releasement Therapy by Michael Baldwin. And he talks all about the different entities and energies, attachments, and how, you know, it used to be able to kind of understand what the entity was attaching to someone, and it was diagnosed with the mental illness, and they would work. You know, it's really interesting, that realm.
Going all the way back to where we started, when I said, "How'd you get in there at the Stanley Hotel?" And of course, you know, you explained, you know, that you were just speaking to the woman in charge of HR. Is that who got you involved? And you just kind of said your background and you know, hypnotherapy, all that stuff. Obviously, of course, they would hire you. I would have hired you in a second. I would have been like,
I was excited.
I was like, you're hired on the spot. But a much broader question would be, how did you find your way into becoming a hypnotherapist? Like, what drew you to that profession?
Yeah, well, you know, as I kind of talked about a little bit, I've been studying shamanic healing, energy work, since I was pretty young. I was 15 when my dad was diagnosed with cancer, and loved him very much. And the doctors told me, you know, he has 6 months to live. So we were best friends, and he didn't really have anyone else besides me. So I became his caregiver. And the doctors were very set on, you know, he has 6 months to live. He's not going to, you know, really pass that. It might even be shorter than that. And me, a spry, you know, teenage girl who loved her dad more than anything, I was like, nope. That's not going to happen. That's not the reality, but thank you. I just was very set. And, you know, that those 6 months with my dad ended up being almost 5 years together.
Oh, wow.
So I took care of him. And during that time, I learned everything I could, you know, Eastern medicine, Western medicine, anything, energy work. And, you know, even convinced my father to go live in Costa Rica for a month in the jungle to work with a shaman. You know, he, at this point, you know, things were working that I was learning, and it was beautiful. And, you know, love makes you, you know, sometimes puts you on your purpose, I think. Right.
Yeah.
And that really is what fully launched me into doing healing work and really understanding, okay, yes, there's this kind of medicine, but you know, there's side effects. I saw my dad going through all these different terrible side effects from all the different medications. And, you know, I was taking them off, putting natural things in, and then understanding, I understand from a very deep level then, like, how emotions become trapped in the body and become illness. I really understood it at a young age, understanding dad's whole story. And so, you know, then basically the journey just progressed. I traveled more, I studied under more healers, just soaking up everything I could after he passed. after he passed away, I went back on that journey. And then, I was working on one of my clients, and he said, you really would be a wonderful hypnotherapist, all this work that you're doing. And he said, one of my best friends is Randall Churchill. And he said, I want you to go study with him. And so Randall Churchill is the teacher of teachers in hypnotherapy. I had no idea, but I was open to it. And
Yeah.
going to that school and meeting Randall, and he's like the head wizard. I mean, you think about Harry Potter, and you think about, it's like he's a modern day, like, magical human and just so powerful. Like, he founded dream work and hypnotherapy. He's just fantastic. And so going to school there, I just realized all that I had learned wrapped up into this, being able to use it with hypnotherapy, really to be able to work on the subconscious mind, clear the subconscious mind of traumas, being able to trace it back from the original point. It was just amazing. And, 30 people from all over the world were in this program, and all 30 of us completely transformed. We were completely different people by the end of the first 30-day part of the program. And so it just was pure magic because, our conscious mind, we can only get so far, but our subconscious mind, like what you were talking about with Jaws, well, that's embedded in your subconscious. You
Yeah.
watch that movie as a cute little boy, scared the hell out of you, and but it impacted you, and it's embedded in your subconscious mind. So, with what I do is, you can kind of trace it back, understand when it started, emotionally clear it from the mind, clear it from the body, clear it from the subconscious. And then you stop seeing the world through this lens, right? This kind of lens that maybe isn't beneficial to you anymore.
Yeah. Can you go back just one moment? It's something you said. And I don't recall how to phrase it, but it's something I truly do believe in. And you had said it. Correct me when I start getting close to what you said. But it's kind of like emotions, maybe events, traumas, being embedded in our physical body. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely,
You
definitely.
said it in a much more eloquent way than what I just said. I just babbled just now, but
Definitely, definitely.
I just recently heard a parable, because I get mad about stuff all the time. I'm really, really working on it. I'm really working on it. No, because it's funny, we talk, I think we're going to talk some more about grief, but I had, for the longest time, I couldn't process grief. And so it was transforming into other emotions instead of the one it needed to be. And I actually really went through a journey of that too, because I was actually feeling guilt for things that were not necessarily like my fault. Like, I didn't kill any of my friends, but when they die, I always like 100% have this whole "it's my fault" era, and then that doesn't go away. And the little thing I heard recently too about anger was something about, I think it's a very old story, and I don't know where it's from, but it's a farmer's son, and he's always angry, he's always pissed off, and the farmer was like, "Every time you get angry, go hammer a nail into this fence post." And so he does, and he's always angry, so he always hammers a nail to the fence post. And then one day he's done, and the whole thing's just full of nails. He can't put any more in there. And he's like, "Okay, now every time you get angry, go pull a nail out." And when he's done, he's like, "Now look at that fence post, and it's, riddled with holes, and it's just ragged and destroyed." And he's like, "Anger leaves a mark." And so I don't know if that speaks much to your point, but I'm trying to get to what you're saying about our psychological reality affecting our physical reality.
Totally. And you know what you said about grief and guilt. Grief is a recovery. After I lost my sister, I had to go through my own recovery process, and there was so much, but there's all the different emotions there. And guilt is kind of where there's a stuckness, because it's, I should have done this. Why was it them and not me? Or what was our last conversation? And, everything, it goes through all these different realms, and guilt can really get stuck in our physical body too. That the guilt of grief, especially, it really can. There's so many different people that I've worked with, and different ailments, different things going on, and we're able to find, like, the original trauma that happened, that started kind of almost creating or manifesting this illness, right?
Yeah, I don't know if I should say this. It's if it, I mean, it's a little bit personal, but a good friend of mine just passed away literally 2 weeks ago, and this is the first time in my life where I've addressed it in a way unlike any other like way that I've ever done in the past. In the past, also, like, I found it difficult or almost impossible to cry, and there's other things, but what I did is I was like, I have to cry. Like, if I cannot hold on to this for years and years and years and years and years and hope that I cry someday, which has happened before. I've had a friend die one time, and it took me like 3 years before I ever like shed a tear on it.
Yeah, so it's
And
too hard to feel there. It's hard to go there, right?
yeah, and it's like, I think it's also, that's cultural, part of being raised in like a world with like toxic masculinity. But this one, I was like, I've got to face this, immediately had to face my guilt about it because I had to think about our last conversations. They were not good, like they were negative. I was so I had like had this whole like I should have been there. I should never have said the last thing I ever said to him wasn't, I don't like, if only that hadn't been the last thing I said to him, on and on and on and on. And but this time I was like, I just have to take this all the way and experience the grief completely. And then in another way, I believe in like getting it out, like just, through your tears, but also like even just sweat. And I have a punching bag, and I have it for exercise, and also I just like to, train in there. But I was like, I need to go in the gym, and it's gonna be loud, and I like had to turn up extremely loud, very like, angry music, because I needed to feel the rage of it too, and just hit the punching bag and kick the punching bag until I literally had nothing left in me, until I was, drenched in sweat. And there was another release from that too. So,
Definitely. Moving energy is important. It really is the
yeah.
stagnant energy. And, tears that are unshed become, illness in the body. That's like kind of a famous quote. And it's very much when I worked with a grief recovery specialist, he was wonderful. And, he really taught me to drop from my head into my heart. He's like, you've got to just feel it. You've got to let it wash over you. You've got to just be there. You've got to grieve. You've got to cry. You've got to just kind of be in that. So I kept having to drop from my head into my heart, drop from my head into my heart, because the head is where all those kind of monkey mind, right? Where you start thinking of like, I should have done this, and really kind of beating yourself up about these things that you couldn't really do anything about, right? But there
Yeah.
always is. That's there's always guilt. That's one of the main things that, and if we don't work through the guilt, sometimes people never get through the grief process. They stay stuck there forever.
And I guess I should bring it back to the hypnotherapy aspect of this. Do you believe that what are some of the, like the more what sorts of conditions might a person most benefit from hypnotherapy? And I'm also obviously like very curious, is overcoming like guilt, like, or grief, like those are, do they fall into the categories?
I mean, think about anything that's like that's blocking you, anything that's stuck, anything you can't move past, anything that's limiting to you, stopping you from being your best self or your most successful self, or stopping you from loving your partner correctly. It's really anything that needs to be unblocked, right? So sometimes, it's doing regression therapy, it's doing inner child work, it's doing sometimes it's past life regressions. That's something I do. I'm a past life regression specialist as well. Sometimes these things that we're dealing with in this lifetime are from a past life, which is very interesting to discover, even pains, even physical pains, which has been interesting. It's this whole It's really, think about any kind of issue that you might have, whether it be, confidence or, to stopping smoking, anything that it is where you're like, I really want to move past this. I really want to become free from this. I like to say you're as free as you wish to be, and it's like, think about that thing that's stopping you from becoming like limitless. What is it?
Yeah.
Are you, and is there a way that together we can work on it and help you become free? And that's the best thing in my life, is when I work with clients and we do, and they become free quickly from these things that have been bothering them maybe their whole life. Maybe they had a really terrible childhood and it still haunts them,
Yeah.
With the right kind of work together and the process of emotional clearing and detached regression, you know, we can really heal these things and move from, you know, state of victim, right, to empowered and ready to move forward in life. So yeah, it's really all kinds of different realms I work in. You know, I also, you know, because I work in the shamanic, you know, energy as well, like I do chakra work and hypnotherapy too. So sometimes it's like, you know, there's stuff going on and we need to clear the chakras and work on, you know, our auric field and boundaries. So basically, like, you name it and we can do it.
Yeah. It's also, you know, living in America, like the Western medicine, reluctance to try anything that's, even things that are in Eastern medicine that have been used for thousands of years, you know, there's this this whole kind of academic and professional Western medicine kind of establishment that is like, no, it's you will take this pill, yeah. Or you know, or just, you know, we're gonna cut off that arm. I don't know.
or the another thing is making people believe that they're sick forever. Really programming their mind that they're very sick when actually your mind and the right kind of healing has the power of moving through so many things. But, you know, there's a big realm we can go into with big pharma if we wanted to, right? But
oh yeah.
I work with because I have the clinical aspect of my work as well. I know how to work with pain. So that's really fascinating because I can have a client that's in pain like 8 or 9 out of 10, work with them for about a half an hour and their pain can drop down to a 2 or 3. Right.
Yeah.
So it's really, so, you know, what if, you know, just what if, you know, instead of the doctor prescribing a ton of opiates, right, to somebody who's in pain, what if there was some curiosity about, you know, what if you tried this kind of healing? What if you tried hypnotherapy? What if you tried, you know, also something that's interesting is when you're maybe sometimes if there's pain and sickness, is there a secondary gain to hold on to this sickness or pain? Is it because that's a very interesting thing too.
Yeah.
Sometimes I experience that and it's because, well, what is it? You know, when we're a little kid and we get hurt, we get attention, right?
Yeah.
And this isn't saying that everybody that I work with has this going on, but sometimes there are people that I work with and it's like, you know, I think you're ready to let this go. And it's like, well, am I going to get the same attention from my husband anymore if I'm not sick? That's come up before, which is really interesting because it's like, so secondary gains is something that sometimes it's like, do you want to be well? Do you want to be free from this? Or do you want to hold on to it for some reason? And is there something in it for you, right? Is there, you know, have you become addicted to that story? Have you become addicted to that story of you being the victim? Have you become addicted to that story? Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. I've been there. It's almost, and I do want to say, going back when we were talking about kind of like the establishment, and it's almost, I don't want to be like I'm trying to say crazy things, but it's like, you know, it's almost like a Munchausen syndrome by society. It's, you know, making you believe you're sick when you aren't, or making you believe you're sick from something that's not why you're, I mean, maybe you are sick, but it's not what you're being told. But then also you just open a whole new door to, like, with the idea of holding on to your sickness but why, like, that's something to explore. Like, that's, and everyone has their own personal journey. They're going to have, sometimes you might have to just face a really, really hard truth. And you've got something wrong with you and there's a way out and you're not taking the way out. Why are you not taking the way out?
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, and that goes a lot of different ways. You know, sometimes it's, you know, it could be the people who are surrounding us, you know, telling us that we're never going to get better. You know, I mean, even for example, with my father, you know, he did pass away eventually from cancer, but the doctors promised that it was 6 months or less. And I had him almost 5 years.
Yeah.
So I believe that, you know, your diagnosis is not your prognosis. You can question it, you know, but if you start to take it in, if you agree, if you make that agreement, okay, I'm going to die. 6 months, that's it. So every, you know, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I'm going to die waking up. But if you can have the right surroundings and personally empower yourself, I've seen amazing things happen. Amazing thing happen. You know, even one of my teachers in hypnotherapy school, Cheryl Canfield, she wrote a book called Profound Healing. It was originally going to be named How to Die Well. As she found out that she had this, you know, form of cancer, it was fatal. And, you know, back when this was, you know, diagnosed, there weren't a lot of options. She was going to go and they said the only way to like help this is this major surgery. Well, the night before the surgery, she had this dream that she died on the operating table. She wanted to be alive just long enough to meet her grandchild, right? So she's like, I'm just going to try to live well. I'm going to try to extend this and live well to meet them, right?
Yeah.
Well, what happened was she ended up making these profound changes in her life, you know, from forgiveness, from working mind, body, spirit, to changing her whole environment to like this inspiring place. There's so much. The book is fantastic that she actually beat the cancer without any treatments. She actually beat it. She actually did. And it's sounds remarkable and crazy, but she did. And, you know, hearing her speak about her story and understanding it. And then, you know, I went on to work with cancer and I went on to work with all different kinds of illnesses. And I've been able to see really miraculous things happen. You know, if you're able to really control your mind and really not take in everything that somebody's saying to you. You know,
yeah.
I think if my dad, you know, I remember having the conversation with him and he's like, only 6 months, kiddo, we better make it good. I'm like, no, that's not true, dad. Don't believe him. You know, something in my funky little teenage Marina self was like, don't believe them. I just knew, you know, whether it be spirit or God guiding me. And we lived well, you know, we changed the diet, we changed environment, we tried different things and it ended up being, you know, really a beautiful experience together and the greatest learning experience. So yeah, I definitely would just say, you know, if you go to the doctor, you know, I just had a client, you know, a couple of weeks ago, she's like, Marina, I have breast cancer. You know, I went to the doctor, I have breast cancer, you know, I know it. And I was like, are you sure? She said, I did the biopsy, but I'm pretty positive it is. You know, I felt it in my soul that she didn't have it, but I was like, you know, but there was much more stuff going on emotionally with her actually, where she needed to do healing. So we dove in and did different levels of healing and, you know, she was fine from that. But, you know, sometimes it was very interesting because there was like an underlying, like real depression and some, you know, some unhappiness going on there. And she's like, It was almost in a sense of like, did you want to believe that you had cancer? You know what I mean? And it's an interesting thing, but what would that bring you? Would it bring you time off work so you could rest? Are you just exhausted? Do you know what I mean? It's a really interesting realm when you really get into it, you know? And then it's like, okay, well, say you do have cancer. What's our treatment plan? How are we going to love the cancer? How are we going to help heal the cancer? It's kind of how I, instead of killing it, right? There's already enough energy going on there. So it's, I mean, there's so many different realms we could dive into, but I've definitely seen amazing things happen. And it's part of the reason why I'm so passionate about it. You know, I was working on a client who had a plantar fasciitis. It's like, you know, in the bottom of the foot and they couldn't move, you know, it was just like affecting her whole leg and everything. And as we unwound the emotions that were tied up in there, part of it was like moving forward in life, you know what I mean? Things started to release and she stopped having to get cortisone shots in her foot. You know what I mean? Like it just like crazy stuff happens all the time, but it's like, are you ready to let it go? And is there any gain in holding on to it? I usually will start off with that.
Yeah. I have a couple. One is I actually do have a family member that beat a form of cancer in a non-surgical, non-chemo way. So that's kind of spoke to me when you said that. I was like, oh, I've actually seen that happen. And then it's kind of funny when you said plantar fasciitis. I have skateboarded my entire life and started very young. And I have spent so many years. And now that nowadays when I go skate, it's much more, I skate ledges and like little, you know, it's a lot more chill, older man skateboarding. but from throwing my body down large sets of stairs repeatedly over and over and over and over again, I got so many little injuries like that. But yeah, a lot of that stuff, it's amazing what you can do. And I've actually, I have declined two knee surgeries and both times healed 100%. Like, neither one of my knees feel like anything ever even happened to them. They feel great. I feel like, I'm sure some people are at home being like, shut the hell up, man. My knees, like, because talking about how great your knees feel, probably it makes a lot of people feel like shit. So I'm sorry, guys.
Hopefully not.
actually, wait, no, it does hurt. It does. It makes a bunch of crunching sounds, but no, they work just fine.
Hopefully it inspires, instead of making them feel like shit, hopefully it inspires them to look at if they want to let it go and explore different ways of doing so, right?
I think I've told this story before on the podcast, but it's very short, so I'll just tell it again. I tore my MCL. This is some number of years ago. It's less than a decade ago. And at the time, I couldn't do the job I was currently doing because I couldn't walk on that leg. Mm-hmm. It was my left leg. So yeah, that makes sense because I had to drive. So I started driving Lyft because I could only use my right leg and I couldn't walk. So I was like, and I was just letting it heal and doing physical therapy. And one night, I live in Nashville where there's like always tons and tons of drunk people to pick up downtown. So if you're a Lyft driver, you can make a decent, amount of money doing that. And I picked up five rowdy drunk people who all turned out to be physical therapists. And they're what are you doing driving Lyft? And I was like, I tore my MCL and I don't want surgery. So I'm just sitting it out here in the car. Every single one of those physical therapists were like, they were like, you made the right decision. Like that. Don't get that surgery, especially not for like the level of my injury wasn't like a straight through tear. It was still connected. And anyway, it was just kind of, I don't know. I really went on a tangent.
No, it's the universe was helping you there. I think that was a confirmation from the universe. You did the right thing, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I'm so glad I did it. I mean, the surgery would have been all that recovery and, loss of money. But I want to ask you this, just going back into your practice, with hypnotherapy. And I know this is probably hard to explain, but like, and I also want to bring up too, like kind of when we talked about earlier, when we were talking about spirits and how, Hollywood or, mainstream ideas of things, the idea of when you think of a ghost, you think, oh no, the boogeyman, and then a lot of times they've created this thing with hypnosis where you think of hypnosis, you think of like, a person with a stopwatch or like a watch on a chain that they can, they swing back and forth and say you're getting sleepy. And, you've seen it a million billion times in cartoons.
The Hollywood thing, right?
The Hollywood thing, yeah. And so obviously that is not how it's done or what it is.
Yeah.
Could you maybe just kind of give me a brief understanding of what hypnosis is?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, and I do think now, the old concepts are really going away. People are understanding what a powerful healing tool it is. So if people aren't thinking so much, it's, this like stage hypnosis, or are you going to make me quack like a duck, or, is it mind control, right? It's none of those things. For me, first of all, it's always an honor. Anybody I work with, it's a very beautiful, trusting journey. And how the process goes is, like an average session, maybe I'll kind of explain that to you. I get to know the client, what's going on, like what's top of mind, what the goals are. And then, to get into a trance-like state. So basically this is like a very deeply relaxed, focused place you're in. So, when you're driving on the highway for a few hours and you go, that's called like a highway trance, how you'll be there and you're just like going and going, you're like, oh my gosh, like 50 miles went by. Where was I? Right. You're trance-like state. So it's a little deeper than that, obviously. But, once my client is in this very deeply relaxed trance-like state, I can speak like very directly to the subconscious mind. So I'm able to work with the subconscious and not just the conscious mind, right? And obviously the brain waves, everything is very slowed down and calm, and it's very clear. So then, you know, the process of the session really differs to what we're working on, right? You know, if I'm, you know, working on inner child work, you know, then that's one thing. So, but yeah, I think that, you know, it's just this very beautiful, trusting journey. And a lot of people say, you know, well, how, is anybody not able to be hypnotized? You know, and I really haven't experienced anybody that hasn't been able to go under hypnosis, right?
Yeah.
You know, for them, it does feel like they're somewhere else, though. It feels almost like dreamlike for them, you know, and it's using a lot of guided imagery. You know, I really create like these cool environments, you know, whether it's the sanctuary I set up for them, where it's this beautiful nighttime garden with the moon sparkling down to do this very intense, beautiful healing work, you know, or, you know, it's really, so it kind of transports you to a different world for a while, and you're able to really do this work in a beautiful way. I try to make it as beautiful as possible. You know, even if it's like, say I'm working on a deep trauma, you know, it's like you can do it in a detached way where you're not you know, you never want to re-traumatize somebody, right? But sometimes you do have to go back to the event to emotionally clear it for them to move forward. And I'll tell you, you know, emotional clearing is very real. And this is where speaking to, you know, emotions getting stuck in the body and illness, you know, sometimes working with people, you know, tears come out, of course, but sometimes people even have this physical vomiting. I've had this happen numerous times when I'm working on some really heavy stuff.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, you know, I've worked on rape cases. I've worked on some pretty intense stuff. Nothing scares me. So, you know, I take everything, you know, but when we've done emotional clearing on some really, really intense stuff, really intense traumas, sometimes there's this release. So then it's almost like, you know, looking in this bucket and like, I can see, wow, that's dark. They were holding on to that for a long time. One time,
yeah.
It sounds wild, but one time it was just like this gray liquid coming out of them. And I was like, wow, cool.
Yeah.
Like, this is their body. I'm like the only person who will see someone throwing up.
Yeah. Better out than in.
Yeah. That's a whole, you know, that's a whole other journey of talking about, you know, attachments or possessions, or, you know, it's like, you know, like sometimes we have these just dark things we're holding on to in our physicality that cause this depression. And, you know, after this one woman I worked on, you know, and within a month, she ended up losing about 15 pounds. You know, it was really, that's an interesting and very intimate thing to speak to. But sometimes when we have even like sexual trauma, you know, we physically gain weight because it's a protection. Energetically, we kind of have this correlation of like a protection. And so we gain weight. So it's very interesting, that correlation. And then when we do emotional clearing work, the weight seems to fall off. It's like melt off. It's almost like you're safe now. You don't have to hold on to that energy. You know, you don't have to create this barrier, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
There's been numerous cases like that, that, you know, and then the person is just free and they're like, okay, I'm safe. I can be, you know, I can wear this. I can show a little, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always have to jump back a little bit because you say these things and I'm like, exactly. But then you continue to say more things that I'm like, oh, exactly that too. And I try to hold on, you know, it's like a river. And I just like try to grab a rock on the way. And I'm like, I remember that I want to come back to this rock. And when you were saying like a physical, you know, it reminds me so much of what I said earlier when I was talking about grief and my recent experience with grief, and I'm not done with it. You know, I'm, you know, we haven't, you know, this is going to be a process for me that I don't care how long it has to take, you know, just this is what I have to do. But what I was saying is like how I felt when it was fresh and new. I was like, you know, tears aren't enough, you know, I need to sweat, like this has to come out of me in any kind of way, you know. And like I can see that too, like being especially something so deeply traumatic where you like throw up, like it makes sense to me that there's a physical reaction, just like, well, you know, why do we cry? You know,
yeah.
like it's, you know, why do we throw up? I mean,
to release. Yeah. And, you know, after, you know, situations like that, you know, and I remember in school, Randall, he's like, get the bucket, you know, he had buckets ready for, you know, these things that would happen. And
oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. Afterwards, they feel so much lighter instantly. Like even their eyes look brighter. Like they just are like they feel it in their whole spirit and their physicality. Like something is gone. That heavy weight, that blockage is gone. But yeah, it's get the
Yeah. Yeah. For
bucket.
sure. And I know you've already kind of spoken a lot about a very personal story about your father, and but also a very uplifting story. I mean, especially them being like, you've got 6 months, you've got 5 years. It is an incredibly different outcome than what you were offered. And I know that you have to protect the privacy of all the people that you work with. But I was wondering if there is a way you could tell a story of maybe just one person that you worked with hypnosis that you felt like was a really, really successful, like a, I don't want to just say success story, but does that make sense? Like a time that you were like, this really worked out how I had hoped and how they had hoped.
Yeah, definitely. I really truly have experienced so many profound healings that have happened. And I really do owe a lot to Randall and Cheryl for teaching me these things. They're the best teachers there are. I'll speak to there's so many different ways I can go with this. I mean, I could go to past life regressions, but I'll go to, when I was living in Denver, there was, I was in Colorado, there was this really beautiful woman that came to me, and she had during her, during her cycle, right? I call it moon time in a pretty way.
Yeah.
Well, she had two wonderful children, but during her cycle, she always had these migraines that lasted about 3 days. So there are about 3 days where she had to schedule her life around these migraines. She couldn't leave her room. So her husband knew, they prepared for it. She was in a dark room for 3 days during the month. So they couldn't travel, anything. And if you can imagine, pretty depressing, right? And it's a hard
Yeah.
thing. And
Yeah.
kids couldn't even come into the room because it was just
I've
too much.
never had a migraine, but I can imagine. I mean, I know what intense pain is. I mean, so that's how I can imagine.
But it was about 3 days every month, and I was like, she came to me with this, and I was like, well, let's explore it. Let's, let's see what we can do. And we did a series of sessions together, but after our fourth session, it was really wild. It was really profound because, we were finding out the root of it, what's going on. And often with the womb area, there can be a mother wound, that can translate there, a mother wound, a feminine, a big wounding there. And we were doing our regression, and then we ended up being able to find the emotion, find the occurrence that had been completely blacked out before. She didn't even know, didn't remember this happened, where her mother was very physically abusive to her, and we saw that we could see the whole thing going on. We did this emotional clearing. Like she it was a wild journey. Her mom like had beaten her with a phone. It was terrible. This woman went through some terrible stuff, right?
Yeah.
And we ended up doing some really deep healing, clearing, empowering her, doing the womb healing. And she came to all these revelations, had the biggest cathartic release, like cried buckets, and it went away. It went away. And so now this person is completely clear of it. And this, it, she's totally, those went away. The migraines went away. The pain went away. So now she lives a normal life, and she doesn't have to spend 3 days. She doesn't have to take any medication. She's
Yeah.
completely, it's gone, right?
Yeah.
That was,
That's incredible. That's
yeah.
a that's I mean like that's kind of more than I had hoped for when you I was just
Yeah.
thinking like I was
I'm like, you want magic? I'm going to give you magic.
you're
No, it's
So
incredible. And I still, check in on her time to time, and she's doing great, but it was wild. So that little girl, like that little version of her, was just so like wound up and constricted and scared. So, it went from, a process of regression work to womb healing to inner child work. But now she's doing great, and like some of the testimonials that people write for me, I just read them. I'm like, I wonder if people believe, these, when they read them. But they're it's profound. It's
Yeah.
truly profound healing that occurs, and there's nothing that makes me happier. It's my purpose, and it helps me make sense too of my father passing. It helps me make sense of my sister passing. Because I'm like, well, all of this pain and everything that I went through, it really helped me to understand all of it on a deeper level and be able to hold this for the community and emphasize, you know, emphasize in a different way, and to be able to, yeah, it led me to do this. So anyways, there's nothing that makes me happier when I hear this. It's like, and especially, you know, when I can get people off, you know, pain medications and, antidepressants is a low hanging fruit. I get a lot of people off of this, and, you know, nothing super wrong with antidepressants, you know, for like a little bit, if, you know, it's a nice little help, you know. And not saying that not, you know, sometimes people really do need those things and have different imbalances, so I won't go there, but sometimes it's heaviness that needs to be let go. Sometimes it's they're stuck in a bad relationship, you know, or they're stuck in something and they're just need to be, they need help to become unstuck, and then they're not depressed anymore. Right.
Yeah. There's a term I learned recently, and I'm probably almost certainly going to say it wrong. And I think it's both. And I think that would apply to like what you just said, like someone who has an actual like chemical imbalance, they're going to need the medication. That's just how it is. And, you know, but that's okay. Like, some people live fantastic lives and they're on that medication their entire life. But at the same time, you could say both. And so you could say, well, yes, this medication does work, but you can also add in a practice, you know, possibly hypnotherapy, possibly just if you even want to just do it alone and be and, you know, create your own meditation practice. Actually, honestly, I'm going to tell you this, just speaking with you today has gotten me so hyped up on getting back into my practice that I have just kind of neglected, not for any negative reasons, just that my life changed dramatically. I had a kid last year, and so I was like, thank you. And I was just, well, a lot of this past like several months has been like figuring out what is a dad, you know, like how am I different, and like, what do you know? And it's not even just that, but it's also just like, it's just the responsibility itself had kind of, I was, I don't know, that's neither here nor there. I'm kind of going into a tangent, but what I'm saying is I had been in a better meditation practice than I had ever really had before in my life. And so now I just feel like really hyped to get back to it, because it's the benefits really are there. And it's just, you know, so
I have too, and I'll send to you a free recording that I like to send out to people. And it's a process that I created. It's my own magic marina process. It's called the subconscious garden of the mind. And in this recording, it has frequency healing behind it. So it does this extra healing, but you're able to go into this hypnosis and able to see all the beautiful things in your life, you know, and then we're able to see the weeds. We're able to see the things very clearly, the blockages that we need to let go of. So it's really cool, because sometimes we don't know. Sometimes we feel like we're in a funk. We don't know, but this really helps to get clear, you know, of what's going on. What do I need to let go of? What do I need to water? I'm happy to send that to you after.
I would love that. Please send that to me. I would be absolutely, I'm kind of like stuttering and kind of going all over the place, but that's,
you're great.
That's me. And that's all, that's just how I talk. So people are used to it.
You're wonderful. You don't need to say sorry to me. You know, it's been perfect. This has been fantastic.
Marina, I have to say a couple of things. One, I have to say thank you. You know, I'm going to thank you for more than one thing. Thank you for being here today. I appreciate it so much that you took the time to talk to me. Two, thank you so much for getting me hyped back up on my own kind of like spiritual journey, my own meditation. Something I just kind of like, you know, I leave that path sometimes, and then, you know, it's always cool to get back to it. And I think you were the person I needed to talk to get me thinking like, hey, this is the thing I haven't been doing in a while. And, you know, just, you know, thank you for everything you do. Thanks for telling me all the awesome stories about the Stanley Hotel. That was wild. And
yeah, definitely. We'll have to do a second podcast, I think.
I think so as well. But I do have to ask you one last question, and that's where can people find you, follow you, and just Anything that you're willing to share about all that?
Definitely. A lot of people like to follow me on Instagram, and I feel like it's kind of this nice, easy way. People DM, and it's a modern day magic woman is my Instagram. And then my website is modernmindalchemy.com. So that's the website to go to if you'd like to. And yeah, I live in Santa Fe, New Mexico. So I do in-person healing here, and then I do sessions all over the globe. So yeah,
cool.
Zoom works just as well with hypnosis, magically enough.
I mean, I can attest to that right now because we just did this all over Zoom, and you took me from like, I forgot that I was meditating a year ago, and now I'm like, I can't wait to have some time to do it. So, and that's a, you know, I think you have a remind people of some of the important things that they may have forgotten.
Maybe you're hypnotized, would you say?
Maybe I'm hypnotized. I do feel relaxed, but
good.
This has been a relaxing day in general. Marina, I have to ask you, wait, I don't have to ask you anything. All I have to do is say thank you one more time. Thank you so much for being on the podcast, and I hope you have a fantastic weekend.
Thank you so much. And it was an honor, and I'm excited to talk to you in the future.